Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, as usual, Christopher Houston, and we're here with Living Dead Paranormal. Living Dead Paranormal is a set of brothers that have actually ventured out to take a look at the paranormal all across the state of Ohio and the United States and beyond to search deeply into the real truth of the paranormal. We're here with two of the brothers, Sean and Rocky Foreman. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hi there.
Nice to meet you.
So I guess let's just kind of get started a little bit, and we'll talk about what got you guys into the paranormal.
Basically, what ended up getting us into the paranormal was we was kids, and our mom ended up getting us a Ouija board. So basically, that's how we actually ended up getting started into it. We was probably maybe about 10 years old around there. And so we started playing with it, and we started using it wrong, and basically our house ended up haunted.
Interesting. So did you get negative occurrences from that, or did you just have something that showed up?
Oh, it was really negative. Basically, the doors would open and shut. You'd see black figures. You'd be crawling on the bed, and you'd be about ready to go to sleep, and then all of a sudden you see a black figure just standing over you. And then the TV would shut on. Well, it would shut off and turn on. The washing machine, the dryer, it would start up and shut down by itself. So.
Now, was that just a Ouija board that you bought out of a store, or did you guys have one of the more handmade kind of wooden Ouija boards that you were playing around with?
Yeah, it just came from a garage sale. She brought it home, and she thought it, you know, would be fun, you know, to sit there and mess around and play with it and see if it would work or not.
So it was kind of an antique Ouija board that she just kind of picked up that was sitting around?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's possible it could have had some form of attachment or something with it. And then, of course, you agitating the situation by using the Ouija board when the attachment followed with it, bam, bam, everything kind of adds up, and now you've got a heck of a mess. I can relate with that a little bit because my first experience, though it wasn't with a Ouija board, it was a very, very dark experience. I had kind of the same thing, doors opening and closing, windows opening and closing, electronics going on and off in the middle of the night, lights dimming. I even had things fly across the room at my head, a lot of things when I was growing up that the average person doesn't go through.
When you're that young, it'll scare the hell out of you, that's for sure.
Yeah, I learned to adapt eventually after a personal experience that I won't get into much detail about it because it's more about you guys, but it did scare me. It made me question my sanity for a little while. I had investigators themselves look at it, and eventually I realized that there was nothing I could do about it, but I could also not let it control my life. So I ended up adapting to the situation before I sold the home many years later. But it got to the point to where I was so used to it. It was like, yeah, whatever. I get it. And just kind of move on.
I can remember sitting there playing with that thing, and the little thing would just be sitting on the board, and you just ask questions, and it'd move by itself. And then all of a sudden, it'd get mad at you if you'd ask, you know, a question it didn't like, and it would take off across the room. And it was pretty wild until they took it out and burned it.
Well, you know that something, and I worked in the college university area for a long time. We did thousands of tests on Ouija boards, and I only found two incidents that were questionable. The rest of them were more psychological, but it brings up a good fact. Whether it's a Ouija board or anything, there's always that risk when you're reaching out. And if you're a child and you grab a hold of something that's already got something attached to it, that makes it even worse because it knows it can feed off of you. And I think a lot of the community out there today that go out for the thrills they don't quite register that, if that makes sense, because there's always a risk when you're going out into the field, whether it's a physical risk or whether it's more that's unexplained. Every time we reach out, whether we use a Ouija board, whether we use an EVP recorder and ask questions, you've always got that risk that something's going to come back that's not nice. It's rare, but it happens.
I agree with you. The Ouija board's no different than a spirit box or, you know, like you're saying, the EVP, doing an EVP session. I mean, no matter what, you don't know who you're talking to, from the other side.
Sometimes you get something positive, and other times you get something negative.
Something like that, but, you know, when your house gets, you know, turned upside down, then you know it's not your aunt or your uncle or...
Or even yourself.
That's another thing. You got to remember when we was younger, there wasn't all that stuff on TV. And, you know, we lived out in the boondocks. You know, when you only got four or five channels you're watching on TV, you don't see a lot of stuff. So when stuff starts happening to you, you know, you don't have a clue where to turn to.
That's true. TVs back then were black and white. You know, a lot of people didn't even have TVs, so you had to entertain yourself.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can relate. That was a lot of Ohio. When I was growing up, we had three channels. You may occasionally, because we got Fox, get the UFO special at 9 o'clock at night, but that would be about it. You didn't really have any of the shows like they came in the 2001 through 2012 and 15, even 1998 through 2015, roughly. And, you know, you didn't have the ghost shows and everything, so it was kind of a quiet thing here in Ohio. People didn't really like to talk about that stuff.
I don't know. Back in, I mean, you know, normally if you talked about it, they'd take you to a shrink or think you was crazy.
Or tell you that you're messing with the devil and walk away.
Oh, yeah. They'd haul you straight to church.
Or you ended up with half of these places we're investigating nowadays.
You know, let's talk about some of the places you guys have been to. I know that you've probably been to several places here in Ohio, but you probably expanded from that. So where have you been so far?
Sean, you want to go or you want me to talk?
Oh, yeah. We've been out to Pennhurst, which was, a crazy, crazy place. But if the back history on Pennhurst is, you know, crazy enough on that, you know, how the children and everybody was treated there, and they just didn't have the people, I guess, enough people there to take care of all the residents and stuff.
Yeah, so basically we've been down to Florida and out to Alton in the Missouri and up into Michigan and where else? Kentucky. Yeah, we've been a little bit everywhere. Seems like most of the time we spend a lot of time over in Indiana lately. We do have an investigation coming up in Ohio, and that'll be October 6th, and so we're looking forward to that. So
Ohio's got some amazing places, I think, that most people don't even realize are here. They go for the big ones, Post Town and Ohio State Reformatory, but there are haunted locations all over the state.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just, like, so many locations. What was that? The Prospect Place. That was pretty cool. We actually got a film out there. Just the history. You know, that's what we enjoy the most is, you know, learning about the history of the building and what took place. We was out there at the Hannah House. No, not the Hannah House. Is that the Hannah House in Ohio?
I don't know if the Hannah House is here in Ohio or not. I've been there. It's a sad thing, but I can't remember if it's here in Ohio or not.
the one that burnt down.
I think it is the Hannah House. I think. It's been a while since I've been at the location.
Was that I better stop while I'm ahead.
Yeah, I ain't for sure.
I think it was the Emmett house. Was it the Emmett house?
Oh, yeah. Over in Waverly.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Waverly, Ohio?
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah, I think it was the Emmett house.
That place was, like, off the hook. Yeah, the Emmett house. That was an awesome location until it burnt down. The Hannah house is over in Indy. We haven't been to that one yet.
Generally, a lot of the more isolated areas tend to have a little bit more activity. The ones that they may have a history, they may have had a handful of people go in. I followed up just recently after Tennessee Wraith Chasers at the Octagon Hall, and I got to say it's been 9 years since I've had any form of a Class A EVP. And they always come when you're not expecting it, when you have the cameras off slightly or you're setting up for the next location or so forth. Luckily enough, when I'm filming, I keep my camera running 24 hours, 7 days a week, basically. The time I get to the investigation to the time I leave, no matter what we're doing, my camera is always running. And my recorder is always running. And we got a Class A EVP that was phenomenal. But the Octagon Hall is not an incredibly well-known place, though it is haunted and people know it. It's just now getting covered. So it's amazing how you can go to some of these smaller places and the activity's just amazing. You go to the major places and it's deader than a rock.
That's our thing is, we kind of just try to go to maybe some locations that's not as well known. It just seems like, if you used to go to Waverly or like Pennhurst or something like that, there's thousands and thousands of people that's been through there and they everybody's got the same, coming up with the same information. So, if you go to maybe a newer location that just opened or something like that, then you're getting some of the first information.
Now, you guys look, from the images that you're doing, you operate fairly well. It looks like you're fairly well equipped when you go in there. So you probably have your cameras, you have your recorders, you have your devices and so forth. So what type of equipment, so that the listeners understand, do you bring to a location and use on a regular basis?
Normally, what we do, we're a little bit different than most people that actually... ghost hunt. Normally we're just film and audio. We run a ghost box and we just film, do most of the filming at nighttime and stuff like that.
Now, do you use a ghost box, do you use like the SB7, SB11, or do you use one of the more elaborate kind of handmade boxes?
We actually got the SB7. And we do actually use it time to time, but the one that we actually use is we call it the UK Ghost Box, and it's made by Steve Morgans from the UK, and he ended up building it for us, and then he shipped it over here in the United States to just let us try it out. And ever since we've got this thing, the stuff that comes out of it is just phenomenal. He's been building the equipment for us. There's other equipment that he's been building, like sensors with lasers. So basically if something was to walk through it, it'd set the sensor off, but it would actually shoot a laser so you'd be able to see it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now.
You can go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. The show's all about you.
I was just going to say there's, we got sensor toys. We do use a baby monitor. We've actually had some good stuff actually come through it. But, you got to make sure that, you ain't picking up on something in town. Like, if you're out there at Pennhurst and you plug in the baby monitor and then all of a sudden something starts talking, it's pretty cool.
Well, Ghostbox audio tools are actually very useful. And I came from an audio background quite a long time ago. And though I don't use the SBs and the and most Ghostboxes because I know a lot about audio, I do stick to EVP a lot of times, which can be picked up on virtually anything. And I got to tell you, it's a very underdone science. Everybody wants to catch the recordings, but most people don't understand the basics involved in it. They don't understand what to look for. They don't test in it a lot of times. And it's very useful. And even a ghost box from time to time, I've seen conversations carried on those things that I can't explain. When you're just randomly getting a word or a name or so forth, hey, that can be anything. But when you're standing there talking like you or I am right now, and you're pausing for a minute, and somebody's continuing the conversation repetitively, there's got to be something to it.
I mean, there's one case, you know, when we first actually started out with the the Spirit Box or Ghost Box, we actually got one of the Radio Shacks, and then we hacked it. It was a radio from Radio Shack. I think it was like a 1257 or something. I don't know. But anyway, so we went ahead and hacked it. You know, we didn't put too much, you know, faith into it. We went down south to Kentucky, and we did a museum down there. And we went down the basement. We was all sitting there. It was me, Josh, Sean, and this guy named Peter. He was a curator. Well, am I allowed to say what it said? Or do you guys bleep it out later? Or?
Well, we're limited on. I try to stay limited on the language for the younger viewers. But
okay.
I mean, you can subphrase.
Okay. So, anyways, we're sitting there. And this radio is sitting there going along. We're asking questions. And anyways, it comes across and it says, "Good luck, Peter, you son of a beep." And so we was sitting there and was like, that really just say that? So anyways, it said it again. So we came back home and Josh and all of us went through all the film, and Josh called down there to the museum and told him, you know, we just want to tell, you know, Peter, thanks, you know, for, you know, helping us out and everything like that. And they said, well, Peter no longer works here. You know, he was fired like 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I mean, was the spirits upset with him or, you know. So then that was our first experience with a spirit box.
Very interesting. So how often have you guys went out to locations and got negative experiences?
I mean, it happens time to time. I mean, you know, I mean, I remember one time we had this family. They called us up and they said that, you know, was wanting us to come down out to do a private residence. You know, and so we packed everything up, went over there, unpacked everything, went and set it all up. You know, this is when we used to set up all the DVR and all that. So took the time, set up all that, and then after about 6 hours later, come to find out, you know, we weren't getting nothing. And, you know, we was just sitting there drinking coffee, you know, it's late at night, and we just told them, you know, listen, man, we ain't getting nothing here. And they was like, oh, that's okay. You know, we just wanted to meet you. You know, we didn't have nothing going on in the house. That's like, are you kidding me?
Huh. I know that in the years that I've been out and about, I've ran into very rare situations where you'll get into something negative more than positive. But it does happen from time to time. I know that I've been pushed a couple of times. I've been scratched a few times. I've been bruised, actually physically hit one time throughout the 23 years. So I'm always curious when I'm talking to other investigators whether they've ran into anything, because it's good for the listeners to understand that most of the time we're out there, it's not what you portray on TV. you're not going to run into the negative "oh my gods" or the terrible stories and all the other situations that yeah, it makes great television, but it's just not the way the real paranormal world works. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
well, one thing.
Good.
I was just going to say the one thing you need to remember though is when you any investigation you go into, you don't need to be negative. Just go in there, be yourself, whatever. And if whatever's in there is going to be negative, it's going to be whatever it is. So, I mean, you don't need to go in there cussing it out or try and provoke it, because then you probably are going to end up with something bad. So just go be yourself and see what happens and have fun doing it.
Well, I like to say to people a lot of times, and there is a way you can provoke, but it's never recommended. Most of the time, if I were dead, if you were dead, if your brothers were dead, would you really want to respond to somebody that's coming in going, "Hey, I'm in your home. Talk to me. You're not here. You're chicken." You know, would you really want to respond to that? And if you did respond to that, wouldn't you get a little annoyed? So why bother doing that? Yeah. I mean, it would piss me off in life. So I'm either going to totally ignore you, or I'm going to get mad.
I agree with you. Yeah. That's the biggest thing is just go in there and treat them like family. You know, people always ask
our number one.
How do you guys actually come up with all this evidence? And you know, you guys are sitting there having conversations with these spirits and stuff. You know, and you're just collecting everything, and it comes down to, you know, just go over there and talk to them like you're talking to grandma. You know, I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, you know, a lot of people think that you need to run around like these TV shows and, you know, jump up and down and act like you're a freak and, you know, come get me, and, you know, it don't work that way. You know, I mean, normally if you go into investigation, most people, when they first start out, they're lucky to get maybe 10 seconds of a 12-hour, you know, run in a place of evidence.
Yeah, I recently had a conversation with several veterans that have been around for 20 or 30 years, and that reminds me of something that I've told people a lot of times. It's amazing how most everybody that goes out, they use the same things, right? You're going to see K2 meters, you're going to see SP11s, SP7s, you're going to see REM pods, you're going to see, you know, all the basic equipment. But here's the question that I pose to all investigators, as well as the listeners out there: what makes you think these things work? How do you really know you're getting a response from a ghost? And do you really know at this point what a ghost really is? Now, I'm gonna actually pose that question to you guys and see what your opinions are. Do you really know at this point physically what a ghost is?
I mean, really, I mean, you don't know what they're made up of or anything, but I can tell you right now from my experience as a child, well, you know, seeing, you know, family members here and there, but I think I was maybe about 18 to maybe in my 20s, and I'll never forget it, you know, but I actually had my grandmother. She came to me one night, and I was sitting there watching TV. And basically, I was going through some stuff, and she appeared right in front of me. She was, you know, solid white, but, I mean, you just make her out, and, I mean, full details. And she's just glowing. And then, you know, she kept telling me, you know, everything was going to be okay, you know, not to worry about anything, that everything would be okay. And next thing I know, there's a wall, like, I don't know, right next to me. She walked through the wall. On the other side of that wall was a kitchen. Well, on the living room, you could run around that wall into the kitchen. So I watched her come through the wall, And then she walked out through the outside walls of the house, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's up to, I guess, everybody to, you know, believe in what they want to believe. But, you know, spirits, you know, I mean, what I've seen out there, I mean, it's all real. So.
Well, the reason I ask that, you touch base on a very important thing. Though we have personal experiences, and a lot of times, including myself, you can confirm that those personal experiences are, in fact, people that could have passed on, as well as other things from time to time. You brought up on a key element that I don't think a lot of people understand, and that is we don't know what these things are made up of, and we don't know exactly where they're coming from. Though we can confirm through personal experiences, yes, from time to time, we know that these are people that have passed on, whether they're personal to us or whether we've confirmed it by finding things that we didn't expect. Yeah. We can't really explain where they're coming from, how they're interacting, what they're made of. And those are the keys that I think a lot of people have forgotten to look for. We went cut and dry, put a REM pod out, oh, gee, we've got a response, must be a ghost. We get our EVPs, well, we know something intelligent just responded because, well, I mean, come on, it responded to us. But where did these things really come from? How do they respond? Where do we go afterwards? And that's the part I think is lacking from a lot of investigation today.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest question, you know. I mean, for most people, you know, I mean, for most people that I've talked to, you know, over the years, you know, they, you know, and what we was raised in, you know, you believe in heaven or you believe in hell. And, you know, over the years, people have asked me, you know, do you still believe in that? And it's like, you know, if there's a heaven, then why is the spirits here? You know, and, you know, and when you're talking to a loved one and seeing the loved one, you know, plain as day, you know, people always want to know, you know, well, why are they here if they're supposed to be in heaven? You know, so I think that, you know, maybe there's like another realm, you know, in the middle until the end time, and then everybody goes, you know, they rise, you know, I don't know.
I had a friend of mine, Robert, that's going to be joining me in December if everything works out right, that's a quantum physicist, he brought up a very valid point, because there's a lot of arguments in science that, you know, they don't believe in the paranormal, they don't believe in angels, they don't believe in demons, they don't believe in God, they don't believe in the devil. And he's a very renowned person when it comes to quantum physics, and he said, you know, in his version, it's possible to have all of that, like you're saying, with another realm. Well, dimensions, theoretically, if you use physics the way it's presented today, if everything travels at the same time and the same frequencies and the same everything, but they also remain separate and they collide from time to time, then traveling between those dimensions should logically be plausible, even though we can't find it. It would be fascinating sometime for somebody to create a – fascinating and scary if you think about it – for somebody to create a doorway and then all of a sudden say, look, here's that other dimension that you call heaven or hell. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Just sit there and watch it go by, you know. That reminds me. I mean, we did a you know, there's a spirit box session that we actually did, and it's in one of our videos. It's called the Panzerotti. If you go to Foreman 04, it's lowercase Foreman 04 on YouTube, and look up the Panzerotti video. Well, there's one section in that video, and we was sitting in this room, and we was running a spirit box session, and it comes across, and it's talking about heaven and hell, you know, how, you know, how they've been there twice and how it's vile. And, you know, and to me, that was like one of the most interesting our spirit box sessions we've actually ever had.
That's really fascinating. Listeners, I'm going to take a brief pause. You are listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality on BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations in the United States, so I do encourage you, if you want to do a digital radio show, podcast, or otherwise, go with the best. Go with BBS. Donald and his brother are great people that take awesome care of you. We will be actually spending time here with Generation Truth and Ghost Sight with our equipment at the world's largest ghost hunt here in Ohio this weekend, not doing a ghost hunt itself, but filming the command center to show people eventually what goes on in the internet in the world's largest ghost hunts, which are now a very big thing across the world and going larger every single week. So I do encourage you to spend some time looking them up, take a look at the individual investigators that are doing the world's largest ghost hunt, as the command center not only broadcasts here in Ohio, but many, many investigators at the exact same time, bringing a community together. And later, in other news, Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown's new podcast just came out on WCGT. I'm encouraging him actually to come over here to BBS somewhere along the line, so hopefully they will give Donald a call here in the next couple of weeks. I do encourage you to take a look at their new podcast. Gavin and Paul have been working very, very hard on that. And pay attention to season 4, which will be coming out next year in a whole new look, because you might be surprised and you might even see them on television somewhere along the line. We are talking with two wonderful brothers from, Ohio here. I almost lost my voice. I apologize, guys. And Living Dead Paranormal. And they're talking about what real investigators do out in the field, which brings me back into the conversation a little bit, guys. I'm sure that you probably have a lot that you want to tell the audience. We've been talking a little bit, asking questions, but I'm just going to hand the mic over to you guys a little bit to kind of talk about what you want to talk about tonight. So tell the audience what you'd like to express to them.
Sean, you can go. I'll let you talk for a little while.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I don't know kind of what we've been going over, but one of the questions we get asked, I mean, a lot, pretty much every investigation we go on, is, you know, do we protect ourselves? Now, at least us three, we don't, because when we go in, we want to be, you know, just pure. And we don't want anything to, you know, interfere with what we're trying to do. So we always tell the people or whoever we're talking to, you know, we're not telling you not to protect yourself. You know, if you're new to the field and you're going to place and you're nervous, scared, it's not going to hurt to, you know, protect yourself some way, however you want to do that. So that's about, I guess, about all there on that one.
I don't know. Protection is a very interesting subject, actually. I mean, now I come from I've studied every religion, just so that you and the listeners and everybody understand. I've looked at many, many aspects. I have my own religious aspects that I don't apply to the paranormal. When you go into a situation, the best way to do that is to, whatever you use, make sure that you understand, keep that faith, and protect yourself. So I can see that being a big question, because people are always concerned about whether they're going to be attacked, whether they're going to, you know, what do you do if something happens? And, for me, it's faith and understanding that no matter how bad these things may seem, they can only affect you if you let them.
Yeah. And, you know, but that's not the only thing is, you know, I mean, you got the spiritual side and all that too, but even your health, you know, I know Rocky and Josh, which I wasn't able to go on investigation with them, which Rock could probably tell you more about it. But they went to a place, and, I mean, it was bad. There was needles and all kinds of stuff. So whether you need to wear a mask, gloves, you know, make sure you got some good boots, or, you know, just watch the places that you're going into. Not saying every place is bad, but, you know, there is people out there that do go into abandoned buildings, whether they got, you know, the right people leading them in there, or they may just go in them. Just, you know, make sure you really protect yourself in all ways. And if Rocky wants to tell the story about that place, he can.
Oh, just, I forget what it was even called. It was a hospital up there in Indianapolis, and they had tunnels underneath of it. And these tunnels would go for miles. And anyways, you get going down these tunnels. Well, anyways, these tunnels had old asbestos pipes and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden it just opened up into some big room. So, I mean, you're down there in pitch dark, you know, running through these tunnels, and so we made it into this one room. And luckily we had a guide, you know, that knew the tunnel system and everything. So we ended up out of the tunnel into this other room, and we was just walking, and then all of a sudden we started hearing stuff crunching, you know. Well, you know, we weren't thinking about it because we was filming on night vision. So basically it was, you know, pitch black in there. All you could see was the LED screen, and it was just green. So we stopped and turned on the light, looked down, and I bet you we were standing in maybe a 2-foot pile of needles that the hospital left behind that was just on the floor. So it's always good to kind of be safe on that end. So,
yeah.
You know, protect yourself.
Yeah, I can understand both from the metaphysical and religious all the way to the physical.
Yeah.
I've been in some places where Texas is an example. We were investigating in Texas quite a long time ago, and I ran right across two rattlesnakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, and then we did a urban investigation in the Rocky Mountains, and I nearly fell off of a cliff for doing something stupid.
That's even scarier.
Yeah, so you know, you really got to watch yourself.
You
gotta be,
Yeah,
I mean, you got to be safe in these situations. You got to. Yeah. It goes way beyond the spiritual a lot of times to understanding that investigation can be a dangerous thing. It's just like any real high risk job. No matter where you go, you can get cut, you can get hurt, you can get attacked by the unusual, which extremely increases that danger. There's a lot of things that apply.
Yeah, I mean, we carry stuff with us, you know, but, you know, until normally after an investigation, you know, I mean, I got a necklace, you know, that was, you know, made, well, a friend had it sent off and made out of Florida, and then she had it sent out and blessed, and then she had it sent to a priest and had it re-blessed, and, so we carry that necklace with us wherever we go. And then we got, you know, a few other items that's from other priests that we carry with us. But the thing is normally we just leave everything in the truck. And then after the investigation, you know, it's in the truck with us. And, you know, normally I'll put my necklace on and stuff like that. We did have... One investigation we actually went on. It's actually on camera, but we was out filming one night. It was during the winter. It's probably about 30 degrees outside. So he was in this little room, they had a fireplace, and all of a sudden, you know, I fired up the camera, and the camera just shut off. I'm like, what is going on? So I fired it up again, and it shut off. Well, after about the fifth time of doing this, I told Josh, I said, go get my necklace out of my bag. This is the necklace that's blessed. So he comes over, gives me the necklace. I just, you know, hanging on the camera. And then I turn the camera back on. The camera stays on. So I take the necklace off the camera, give it back to Josh. The camera shuts off. So I put it back on the camera, and the camera stayed on. So I told Josh, I said, well, I said, we're just leaving it on the camera the whole night while we film. So we ran it with, you know, the necklace on the camera all night, and it never shut off. It went to shut down. I took it all off, and the camera just died again. But still to this day, we've never had a problem out of that camera, you know, turning on or turning off. There's just that one location that we was at.
You know, it's actually interesting that happens. It's happened to me many, many times for no logical reason. Your batteries will drain. Now, of course, obviously, if you're in the middle of extremely cold environments, your batteries drain because of the cold. Extremely warm environments, your equipment malfunctions because it's too hot.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens when you're in a area where it shouldn't happen? And now your cameras are shutting on and off. And only in specific areas. I physically had one environment where whatever was in that room would turn my camera on and off on command. I had it sitting on a tripod at one point, actually. I walked into the room, it turned off. I walked out of the room, it turned back on. I walked into the room, it turned back off. So I sat it on the tripod. I turned it on. I said, okay, if you're here and you don't want the camera running, turn it off. It turned it off. I said, prove to me you exist. Turn it back on. It turned it back on. And we continued to do that for at least 45 minutes to prove that this wasn't just the camera. And I actually tore this camera apart, by the way, listeners, to make sure it wasn't an error in the camera. Never had a problem with it. And I couldn't figure out how to put it back together, which is the ironic thing. So I wasted $400.
Yeah, that's the sad part. Is when you tear it apart or something like it, and you're like, oh man, I shouldn't have done that. It was a ghost. They got me.
But it is interesting that happens, and it's an unexplainable situation. Some people try to say it's because they're using the energy of the devices. There are other explanations that they use it as communication variables.
Yeah.
Truth is, we really don't know. But it is interesting. And neat when it happens, to be honest with you.
Well, the craziest thing was that it didn't affect the other camera. And then later that evening in that location, we ended up getting a female photo of a female. And you can just make her out and everything. It's actually in that video. That's pretty cool.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, do you guys have your own YouTube channel? Do you actually post things on video where people can watch you and follow you?
Yeah, if you go to YouTube, it's just lowercase F, and then O-U-R-M-A-N, Foreman, and then it's a 0 and a 4. And, if you go there, that's our YouTube page, and we've probably got maybe over 100 some videos out there.
So you've heard it there, listeners. Make sure that you look them up on YouTube. You guys, do you have your own website as well?
No, we don't have no website. We're just on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
So what are you guys planning on doing here in the next, you know, of course, through the holidays and so forth? I'm sure, like you said, you've got one location. Do you have many locations you're looking to, or are you going to any of the conventions?
I don't think we'll be hitting any conventions this year. Here tomorrow, I think we'll be hitting maybe a couple different locations to, you know, do some cleansing. And then October 6th, we'll be down there and Chillicothe filming.
I think we have a new video coming out too, right, Rock?
Yeah, it's called the Emily's Room. It'll be coming out probably here, I think Josh said the 1st of October or somewhere around the first or second week of October. It's a story about a little girl and what she's been going through, and it's really sad.
You know, special note, just so that everybody knows, I recently spoke to a young gentleman, Zach, which was on an affiliate station when I was doing an interview. And I just wanted to do a personal note tonight before we get back in the last few minutes to the guys here. Zach lost a friend a while back, and he's a big fan of several people that I work with, including Brandon Kreitzer. And I told him I'd give a personal shout-out tonight because that friend was in the paranormal and she passed away, and he's been looking for her ever since with very limited situations in his life. So, Zach, I'd like to dedicate the show to you just so that you are out there if you're listening, and say that, you know, we've all been there at one point or another. We've lost people that we love, and hopefully somewhere along the line in your pursuit of the paranormal, you'll get a chance to speak to that young lady again. Next week's show, we're going to have some very exciting people on. I want you to make sure to tune into that as well. We have been speaking to Living Dead Paranormal, and I'm going to give you both of the brothers' names so that you can look them up on Facebook, of course, obviously, as well. I'm losing my voice here, guys, so I certainly apologize for that. But do you have anything that you want to tell the audience here before we leave that you really think is important for them to understand, or that you want to kind of leave on a personal note so that everybody, you know, kind of gets a feel for Living Dead Paranormal?
Yeah, my thing is, you know, just go out, have fun, be safe, make sure you get permission before you go anywhere. You know, almost everybody's open for anybody to come in. And, you know, always just have an open mind when you go in. Because if you're going to be closed off, you know, more than likely you may not get anything. And just because you're in a place for 6 hours, you may only get something, you know, in 10 minutes, you know, and that may be it. So just always keep that open mind and have fun with what you're doing.
Well, yeah, you heard it here, guys. Have fun in what you're doing. What about the other brother there? And I apologize, I can't decipher between the two, so I don't know. I don't know which one just spoke there.
Yeah, I just don't know how much time you got left. I was just gonna say, you know, thank you for having us, and yeah, you know, it's been fun, and you know, we've enjoyed it, and
well,
just, you know, for people to just go out and be safe, and you know. If you ain't getting anything in one room, don't spend, you know, hours and hours in one room. Just move on until you start feeling something weird. And then normally that's where you'll find it.
Well, it's always a pleasure having investigators, especially here in Ohio, on. I'm glad that you enjoyed the show. You guys are always welcome to come back if you choose to. I mean, there's always available slots, so make sure you reach out to the assistant there. Living Dead Paranormal, Josh Foreman, Sean Foreman, and Rocky Foreman. You can find them on Facebook, obviously, individually. You can also look up Living Dead Paranormal on Facebook. They have a link there that you can look into them. And, of course, feel free to look up their YouTube information and so forth. One last thing to remember, and I always close out the show the exact same way as you're learning today from those that are in the field. In the paranormal, as I tell everybody, truth should always be that reality. Whether you're just starting off, whether you've been in it for 30 or 40 years, the key things to remember is when you're out there, it's a different experience for everybody. As investigators, a part of our job is to go beyond what we think we know, apply the science and questioning, and find out what we could know in the future. So you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Keep that in the back of your mind and understand that in the paranormal, whether you're new, whether you're experienced like these gentlemen, truth should always be that reality. So make sure you look, you search, you question, and find that truth that applies to you. We'll talk to you next week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and have a great weekend.